Welcome to another edition of Summer is Coming. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and I am joined by my now known as illustrious partner.
Oh, Dark Notch, I'm illustrious.
You were last time, so you must still be, unless something happened in the meantime.
I don't know, it's so much changes, you know, every time we podcast. Sometimes I'm just, you know, the host that one day you're going to boot, and the next one I'm illustrious. It's fantastic.
I guess you're getting promoted.
I feel honored.
It does not come with a salary boost, just so you're aware.
That's really depressing.
Yeah. So today we're going to start by reviewing the newest pack, chapter pack, The Pirates of Lys. I realize we're a little bit behind. Other podcasts have already done that, but that's okay. We figure that our information can supplement the other ones that you've already heard.
This is an exciting pack, Tiny. The deeper we go into this cycle, the more excited I am about a bunch of the mechanics.
What mechanics specifically are you excited about?
I like these new plots that we're seeing. You know, Cersei's scheme is, you know, House Lannister only, another specific plot for a house. It's really fantastic. You know, I'll read it just so the listeners that might not know it can know it. If you win a challenge as the attacker and the defending player does not have more participating characters than you, choose and kneel one character controlled by the losing opponent. This is a 3 gold, 6 initiative, 1 claim plot. So with the 6 initiative, it really means that you're probably going to be going first. And this slots so nicely into those Power Behind the Throne decks where you can kneel out a large portion of your opponent's board with this plot alone. So it's another very powerful plot. It's house specific. I like that. What do you think of Cersei's scheme, Tiny?
I think it's phenomenal. I mean, I don't really know what to say other than this plot makes me even more terrified to run into Lannister this weekend at the first regional of regional season at Kingdom Con. But yeah, this plot is great. I'm not really sure how to handle it is the problem. Most plots, you know how to handle them. This plot, if you're not going first, what do you do? Do you have any solutions for handling this plot, or is it just a dead turn?
Well, I don't know if it's a dead turn. You have to somehow control those characters that are going to win those challenges. Or you could literally win the challenges, right, on defense, and that would prevent them from kneeling out your characters. But you'd basically be kneeling to...
Yeah, but isn't that the whole point? That Lannister has a crazy amount of intrigue guys. They have Cersei out. Maybe they have Littlefinger out. They're not even kneeling to do these challenges. Do you really think you're winning intrigue challenges against them and multiple intrigue challenges against them?
No, but I can see types of control here. You know, I can see Martell removing all the icons on the other side of the board and then Lannister only getting to kneel a single character. I can see, a burning on the sands or things like that to help mitigate some of the damage that this plot would do. But it's a very solid plot. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, like, Forgotten Plans. I got to be running Forgotten Plans. Well, even if you run Forgotten Plans, you guys got the same gold, the same claim, and they get initiative. So, you know, the Lannister player isn't feeling a huge hit here with the Forgotten Plans.
The other thing is, this is really hard to time with Forgotten Plans. You know, some things aren't as hard, like First Snow, some other plots that are more obvious, Threat from the North. These aren't that tough to time with Forgotten Plans. I feel like this could just be played at any random moment because they already have lots of great plots in their deck. It feels really hard to predict when someone's going to play it.
I agree. It's a very strong plot. I think it's. I think all of these, you know, house-specific plots are pretty strong. This is one of the stronger ones. Probably as strong as the Barrow plot.
Yeah, that's a toss-up. I mean, the Barrow plot, to me, seems like it's going to open up an entirely new deck type. And so from that perspective, I think it might be stronger. But for board control, this plot is certainly stronger.
See, the Melisandre schemes, I like more because of that. But is it stronger? I'm not sure. I think they're about equally strong. It's just I think you're right. There's a billion more decks that Melisandre schemes is going to slot into.
Yeah, I agree. Since I've been playing, this is the first pack I've seen that has multiple plots that I'm excited about. Normally, it's one good plot, one terrible plot, or zero plots, or two terrible plots, but this has a whole slew of good plots.
Yeah, I wouldn't say so. There's definitely two that I think shine above. We already talked about Cersei schemes, and I think the next one is an intrigue gamut city plot, and it's negotiations at the Great Sept. And basically it says, if you have no other city plot in your use pile, choose an opponent. You and that opponent may each choose to shuffle your hand of at least one card into your decks and replace them with five cards of the same deck. This is a fantastic plot for any kind of rush.
Yeah.
Barrow Rush, Stark Siege, even a Lannister Power Behind the Throne deck that's just spinning out characters and wants to replenish their hand. It's not draw, so you still have your normal draw effects. Fantastic card. And it fits so well in these Lannister Rush decks because, you know, with the two claim, and if you... Those Lannister Rush decks can really quickly knock your opponent's hand down to zero. And if they have no cards, they can't do that first part of discarding at least one card to get the next five. So it can give you some nice card advantage.
Yeah, that's for sure. I just can't believe it's two claim. I feel like this plot would be phenomenal if it was one claim. The fact that it is two claim is just insane.
I agree. It's super good.
Yeah, this is actually the plot that I'm most fearing when I play my Targ deck. Because I usually have, even if I only have three cards, I've crafted that hand. I probably have a Feast, a Flame Kiss, and a Queen's Knight. And I'm looking at that going, I could get five random cards or keep the three that I've crafted this hand around. And my opponent, in the meantime, is getting five new cards, or I guess a four-card increase. And it's just very frustrating whenever I see this plot. It is a really good plot.
Yeah, I totally agree.
What about Victarion schemes? I feel like this is a pretty big step down from the other two.
Yeah, I'm not as excited at all about this plot. You know, it has a slightly higher initiative at 7. It's got 3 gold, 1 claim. It says, during unopposed challenges, raise the claim value on your revealed plot card by 1. I'm not pumped up about this. If it was a standard 2 claimer, I wouldn't be, you know, running around in circles about it, so it doesn't do it for me compared to, these other house-only plots.
Yeah, it seems incredibly weak compared to the other house-only plots, and I certainly am not going to play this in a random Greyjoy deck, so it seems like it only fits into some unopposed or a deck that's really concentrating on getting that high initiative, and it just doesn't seem that great to me. I can't see myself playing this card.
Yeah, even in an unopposed deck, I mean, it's decent, but I'd want something more than just a claim raise on an unopposed, because why wouldn't I just run a 3-gold, 2-claim plot if that's what I wanted?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's really, if you're running Bay of Ice, then it can be useful with that. But Bay of Ice is just so dangerous right now with so many Hollow Hill decks running around, it feels like you're just giving your opponent draw half the turn.
Yeah, Bay of Ice, you know, you need to win one initiative, get the replacement for it, and then after that, every time you win initiative, you get a card, but if you Val, you're guaranteed to give your opponent a card, and then basically the next card you gain just breaks even again. So it's a tough card, you know. It works great in Hollow Hill decks, because they can win initiative a lot more, but other types of decks, I do find Bay of Ice very dangerous.
Yeah, especially if you're trying to run two-claim plots. Two-claim plots just have low initiative.
Yeah.
All right, so what do you think about Torhen Square? We have military battle, city plot. If you have no other city plots in your used pile, raise the claim value by 1 during military challenges. And it's a 3-4-1.
When I first thought it would be pretty interesting. You know, some people really want that military battle, primarily Stark and Greyjoy, to trigger their to be a Kraken or to be a Wolf events. But... You know, in those decks, it seems that I'd want to use other cities as their opener. Either, you know, the put an army into play or go search for a maester instead of this, and then use something else from a military battle. So I think it'll find a place in some very specific decks, but I don't feel like it's, you know, one of those top plots like the first two we talked about.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's going to find a place in zero decks, actually, because you're right. The decks where this would be useful, there are just too great of characters that you can get from Gates to make it worth it. There are other military battle plots that are completely viable.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, unless there's something that starts being like, if you have a military battle plot as your revealed plot card, do X, then I could see stuff like this become way more useful, where you have to continue to have a military battle revealed all the time for some kind of great effect. But we haven't seen something like that yet. So, you know, maybe this is preparation for the future. But
yeah. So what's your favorite character in the pack?
Oh, my favorite character. You know, I love Salador San. He's kind of sexy. He's a smuggler, a captain, a trader. He's got the naval icon, which is nice. And he's got this great response, which is, after you play a smuggler character, pay 2 gold to choose and discard from play one non-limited location with printed cost 3 or lower. This is something Bearer really needed, this ability to destroy locations. They had it in the other Salador, but he was only strength 2, which had all these problems. I love that he has an intrigue icon here, and it shores up that, you know, the perceived weakness in Bearer of intrigue. I really like the new smuggler cards. I think by the end of the cycle, Bearer's going to have a very strong smuggler deck out there if they continue with, you know, increasing the number of smugglers like they have been.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think not only is he my favorite card in the pack, this might sound crazy, but he could end up being close to the best card in the cycle. Right? And that probably is crazy. But at only 3 cost, for 3 strength, 2 icons, good traits, and repeatable location control. And I think we talked about this last time. If you use the word repeatable and anything good, you have me. So I'm extremely interested in him. His cost is pretty high, 2 gold on top of the cost of the character to destroy the location. So it's going to have to be coupled with a number of cheap smugglers. But I'm kind of seeing him coming out of like a black sales deck with a bunch of smugglers that all have these enhancements and being able to go get the cards you need. I just feel like there's going to be a really, really strong deck there, and he's going to be one of the absolute anchors of the deck.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, everyone's like, oh, he's got a traitor trait. I can't think of anything that's negative to traitors at this moment, really.
I believe it's just Dario that I can think
of.
Yeah,
I mean, so until there's more traitor hate out there, I'm not too worried about the traitor trait.
Yeah, the traitor trait is fine in my opinion. Okay, so what about one of my other favorite cards, Andric the Unsmiling?
Yeah, he was up there when I was looking at my favorite character. You know, I really, Ironborn Lord are his traits, both fantastic in the Greyjoy decks. He's 3 cost for 3 strength, 2 icons, military and power, and he's got the naval enhancement on the military, which is great. And it's really his response that everyone is talking about, which is, after you win a challenge in which he participated, after you've won by 4 or more, sorry, total strength, choose the topmost location in the losing player's discard pile and put it into play under your control.
Yes.
With the amount of location control that Greyjoy has, it's not hard to trigger this guy.
Yeah, I think that response, harnessed correctly, is going to be amazing. So you bring in, you know, you let them go first, they bring in their Gaston Grey, boom, you knock it out with Newly Made Lord, you win a challenge with Andric the Unsmiling. Guess what? They never get a Gaston Grey the rest of the game, because once it's on your side, if it's unique, they can't play another one. That's why he's totally broken.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like you said, he steals the best locations if you can destroy them and prevents them from ever getting them back.
I must say, though, I've used him in my Greyjoy Black Sails deck, and he's done nothing. So it might be one of these cards that on paper looks completely phenomenal, and then in a tournament, say, of, you know, 8 or 9 games, you only get to trigger him like twice against a reasonable location. I have stolen like Seats of Power and things like that, but really that's just not that useful.
I've seen him in basically a winter choke deck, and the opposing player was stealing all kinds of things, you know, gold producers, just stuff so that a lot of the problem with Greyjoy choke is they kind of choke themselves a little bit. And when you're able to take the lands from your opponent and actually use them, even if it's just, you know, reducers like, you know, the reducer for military, reducer for power, reducer for intrigue, or if it's a +1 gold, it can make a big difference.
Yeah, definitely. I think he could be really interesting in a Price of War, Warcrest deck. It doesn't even have to be dedicated, because, for instance, in my Black Sails deck, because Victarion is so amazing and he has a Warcrest, I was going in, getting Victarion. If they played a lot of locations, I would go into the hold, get Price of War, blow up some stuff with Price of War. Then you can trigger Andrich the Unsmiling. You have a lot of opportunities in Greyjoy. It's not just newly made lore. There's a lot of ways to blow up locations.
So there's one other character that really jumped out at me when I went through this chapter pack.
Well, let me guess. The House Targaryen Loyalist?
No, sadly, that wasn't
It wasn't him. That's my bad.
Moro. Is that how you say it? Morio?
Oh, really? That's the guy who's interesting you?
Yes.
Oh, you're not afraid of his 3-cost ally status?
No, because I find him interesting, not good. You see the difference?
Ah, I see.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's bad. I'm just saying he's not a shiny, but he really interests me. I just, you know, he's got double naval enhancement. He's 3-cost. He's got the ability to gain renown. I find that, you know, out of Stark, renown is one of these premium traits. They don't have a lot of it. And to have renown on the two icons that they're weakest in general is kind of cool. So I think he's an interesting character, and definitely the ally, as all allies, scares me a bit. Though I have been seeing less dissension in the meta than before.
Yeah, but it's not just dissension. It's Aerys Okart, it's Jorah Mormont. I feel like ally is still an incredibly vulnerable trait.
It's the most dangerous trait. It's more dangerous than, like, refugee.
Yes, I totally agree with that. Because of that, I have not been able to slot him in a deck yet. I'm working on a Stark Black Sails deck, and I'm really debating whether to put him in. I keep putting him in, and then looking at him again and going, 3-cost ally, what was I thinking? And then I pull him back out, and then I look at him again and go, wow, 2 naval enhancements and renown, put him back in, and the cycle repeats.
So, you're talking about Black Sails a lot, but this pack actually introduced another new agenda, the Long Voyage. This agenda is really interesting. I played against it a lot recently. It says your minimum deck size is now 85 cards. When you draw during the draw phase, draw 1 additional card. Seems pretty standard. 85 cards dilutes your card pool a bit, but there's a lot of deck archetypes that have so much redundancy now that you can play 85 cards and you can have cards that will do similar things as if you were playing a 60-card deck. So I think good archetypes for this type of thing is Greyjoy Choke, Targaryen Dedicated Burn decks, and Stark Kill can all run the Long Voyage for card draw and have so much redundancy in their, you know, given specialty that they can still make a very strong 85-card deck. What do you think, Tiny?
I agree with your original premise, and I disagree with all 3 of the decks you named. I feel like with Stark Kill, there aren't that many kill cards, and in an 85-card deck, you are just not probably drawing them. If you just mean, like, a Stark 2 claim deck, sure. But even with stuff like To Be a Wolf, they're going to say, don't get an event, so you can't get your events. I'm not sure that it's going to work that well.
Well, if we look at mathematically, the chance if you have a 4-card set up in a 60-card deck and an 85-card deck, and you get the extra draw from the Long Voyage, the chance of having a kill event in your hand if you're running 6 of them, I think on a 60-card deck is like, I think there's about an 11% difference.
Yeah, but to me, where it really becomes big is the second one. It's not drawing 1 of them. A Stark Kill deck wants to draw 2, maybe 3 of them during a game. And I feel like that's just not going to happen with the Long Voyage, at least not consistently.
Well, I think, you know, the extra card that you're drawing every round than you would normally in a Stark Kill deck, like a dedicated kill non-knight deck, will compensate for the larger size deck. Very close.
Yeah, I'd have to try it. I'm going to have to disagree with that. What I would say is that Stark has enough great characters where you could build a Stark 2 claim deck, maybe even make it a Bear Island deck and just go get that with your building season and sort of build around that. I would say basically any deck where you want to pull certain events, I'm nervous about. And that's why I feel the same way with Targ. I feel like Targ is just now reached the viable level because of stuff like Incinerate gives it enough redundancy. But if you go up to 85 cards, suddenly I feel like there isn't quite enough burn, and now you're back to playing terrible cards like Dragon Skull and the character that burns. And those, there's a reason why Targ wasn't that good before when those were the burn cards.
Well, I mean, Prince Edward Island Alex has been playing a Long Voyage choke deck, and it's been pretty effective. He's had some good results with it so far, and I've played it a few times. And it's a pretty decent deck. It's a strong deck, so I can definitely see that choke has enough redundant cards. I've also seen a Stark Kill deck. Now, I haven't seen the Targ Burn deck, but a Stark Kill deck that was really well run out of Long Voyage, and he seemed to be getting the kill events. Now, I only played two games versus it. It might have been, you know, luck of the draw that he got the kill events when he needed or not. I have to play more, you know, a lot more before I could really say for sure. But they both had a smooth feeling to them. And that's a big thing when, you know, I'm playing a deck or I play against a deck. Does it have a smooth feeling, or is it kind of choppy that he's drawing luckily into what he wants, or does he just always seem to have the answer? If he always seems to have the answer, to me it feels like the deck is, you know, smooth and he's getting what he needs.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the three draw. And the deck to me that popped into mind was just Bera Good Stuff. Bera has a zillion characters that whenever I build a Bera deck, I'm like, wow, I've got like 20 more characters I would love to put in this deck. How do I trim the character pool from 55 to 35? And this makes it real easy. You just stick them all in there.
See, Bear is one of the ones I wouldn't naturally go towards the long voyage with, because I want to be sure that I draw certain good characters.
Well, one thing I was thinking rush. Is that with, well, yeah, it wouldn't be a Bear rush deck, I don't think. I think it would be more of a Bear, lots of guys with renown. Every turn I'm putting guys down with renown. I'm not necessarily rushing, but I'm getting power fairly quickly, and you're constantly having to deal with this new threat.
It's a tempo deck that you're trying to control the plays your opponent by putting so many threats on the board that he has to constantly react to you, basically.
Right, and then cards like the Ashai Army work really well because they're also pulling power off of their house. So while that card doesn't work that well in a rush deck, I feel like it would work well in this deck. I also think you can then run the Heralds. I mean, if you have all this extra space, you run the Heralds, and that gives you six copies if you're running three times of some person to make sure you're hitting that card.
Right. Yeah, I could see that. That's a interesting idea. It'll be interesting to see how often people are playing. I know right now that a lot of people are playing it because it's the new shiny agenda, which is cool.
Yeah, I'm really happy because when we first saw this, I heard a lot of chatter about this is the noob agenda, that this agenda is going to trap new players into going, three draw, and then have the worst decks ever. But I really do think there's some viable decks that are going to come out of this. I'm not sure we're going to see an elite top-tier deck because the whole point of those decks is they're all efficient cards. You know what you're going to get, and I feel like there's just a little bit more variability with this agenda that I think it's going to hold it just under that place.
All right, so we've talked about the agenda. We've talked about the characters.
Well, we missed a character.
Oh, do you have another
character? One of my favorites.
Okay, what's that?
Sir Lancel Lannister. And I realize he's pretty vanilla. But two cost for three strength that can bump even higher with stuff like Doubting Septas, which you're playing anyway. To me, that's a phenomenal character to have in Power Behind the Throne. I feel like that's what Lannister's been missing, is just really good cheap characters. Because their cheap characters are not like boatswains. They're just kind of blah. And at the two cost slot, I feel like he's really quite good.
He's got two sexy traits, too. Lord and Knight are both good.
Yeah, definitely. So I like him a lot. I like him so much that I've been thinking of crazy things like building weird holy decks with him, like building a Lannister holy so that you have, you know, him not kneeling. And they look like they're going to be absolutely terrible, but it just gives me the idea that maybe there's something there.
Yeah, I don't think there's a Lannister holy yet, but he's an interesting character. He's you know, he's not as good as the other ones we've talked about, I think, in my opinion, but he's definitely better than Vanilla.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely, I mean, he's no Andric the Unsmiling. He's certainly no Salador San, but for Lannister, I feel like he fills a gaping hole that they have.
So there is a very interesting location in this pack. Oakenshield Port. It's basically a Bera Rush location. And it reads, after you win a challenge, discard one gold token from Oakenshield Port to claim one power for your house. Discard two gold tokens to claim two power for your house instead if a naval attack or defender was participating in that challenge. And it, when this location comes into play, it comes into play with six gold tokens. So basically, it has the potential to grant you six power. And what I really like is you're winning here, and it says if a naval attacker or defender was participating, it doesn't have to be yours. So if they defend or attack with a naval character, you win, you can trigger this and get the power. I like the location. It's definitely interesting. It's unique. You could House of Dreams it if you wanted.
That seems kind of insane, but
it does. I think it would be insane, but you know, you're talking about a, you know, trying to rush to victory on first turn. To me, that would be one of the fastest ways to ensure you could do that.
I actually kind of like that. We should try to build that. The question I have though is, would it work with House of Dreams with the way it's worded with the getting the gold tokens on it?
When it enters play. It's interesting. Yeah, does the location enter play from House of Dreams?
Yeah, we'll have to do a little research on that, I think. So perhaps one of our listeners can email the show at summeriscomingpodcast@gmail.com.
And let us know. So I definitely think we'll see some of it in play. People will definitely fool around with that location. Is there any other locations that you liked in this pack, Tony?
I like the Hellholt Docks. It's only a one cost, non-unique, so you can put out a bunch of them. Response, after an opponent kneels a location, kneel Hellholt Docks to choose and kneel a location. This seems to me like it could be pretty strong. I mean, the problem is Martell already has a zillion amazing locations. But I don't know, this has my brain moving. It sounds like it could be really strong.
Yeah, some people were saying, you know, oh, this is a great way to get influence. They kneel an influence location to, you know, use the influence. You get to kneel another one because it doesn't matter when they do it. You know, it's just a response. I said, yeah, it's interesting, but like you, it's like, what type of Martell deck is this going to slot into? And it seems to be really, really useful in some circumstances and not useful at all in a bunch of others.
Yeah. What I'm thinking, and this is probably, again, terrible because many of my brainstorm ideas are, what if we had some sort of choke Martell build? And what I mean is not like a Greyjoy dedicated choke, but a versatile deck that, against certain archetypes, it tries to choke them out a little bit that first turn. Like, for instance, a Gaston Grey deck struggles a bit with a really rushy deck. This could be a way to kind of slow down a rush deck so that they can't get all those reducers off.
Yeah, you'd have to play like White Raven, and you have to do some kind of... I don't see it.
Yeah, yet. I don't see it either. So we'll see. Maybe it'll be good at some point. It certainly is good for kneeling things like the Iron Throne. I mean, Iron Throne is just death for Martell.
Yes, I definitely see that. You'll see Lannister kind of like, whoa, I don't want to use any of my reducers now because he's going to kneel my Iron Throne and that'll let him have his draw or whatever. So
exactly.
It's definitely a good counter to that.
A card that people seem to be very excited about that I'm much less excited about is the Bear and the Maiden Fair. What do you think about this card?
Not so excited about it. You know, after you win an intrigue challenge by four or more total strength, the losing opponent chooses and discards two cards. So you're basically gaining a one-card advantage with this. It's an event slot. Why am I not just running, like, choose and kill a character?
Yeah, you mean terminal schemes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it really, to me, is pointless in Power Behind the Throne. If you're playing this, it means you're already winning a bunch of intrigue challenges by a ton. So why not just run two claim plots and destroy their hand? So this seems complete overkill there. So it really only seems good in a different kind of Lannister deck that's not really targeting their hand. And I guess in that deck it can be okay. The problem is they get to choose. The first time this was played against me, I thought, oh no, I have three cards in my hand. One of them's phenomenal. I hope you don't get it. And I start shuffling my hand, and he goes, no, no, you get to choose. I'm like, I get to choose, and I started laughing. I was like, that's the stupidest card I've ever heard of.
Yeah, I mean, I can see some value in it. You know, you want to destroy someone's hand on turn one. You charge out, you hit them with this, and then you hit them with a two claimer. So they're losing four cards in one challenge. Hit them with another two claimer, six cards. It can hurt.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's a terrible card. What I am saying, though, is it seems like a win more card. Like, if it's what it's going to do is really help you in matchups where you're probably already crushing them.
Yeah, that's the way I feel about it, too. And, I mean, if I was playing a Lannister Power Behind the Throne deck, like you were saying, and I wanted to hurt their hand more, I'd put an Epic Battle instead. Because I'm basically going to get to trigger whatever my power grab is another time, and I'll probably get two cards out of their hand, and it'll be random.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a tight slot. I mean, you have Misinformation.
House Divided. You have Killed the Wrong Dwarf. I'm with Small. I mean, there's just so many good events in Lannister.
Yeah, to me, it's like the 10th best event in Lannister. And at that point, I'm sure there's some deck that it will fit very nicely into, but not a deck that I'm currently seeing.
I would play it if it just read, choose an opponent. That opponent must choose and discard two cards from hand. Then yeah. It'd be decent. Then it would go in.
That would be good.
Yeah. But now, because then you could throw it in Clansmen and stuff, you know, but.
Right, exactly.
Now I'm not as interested.
What do you think of this card? I haven't heard much chatter at all, but Ours is the Fury, the House Baratheon only event. After you win a power challenge by four or more total strength, stand all participating unique characters you control.
Not super excited about it. Baratheon already has a lot of great standing effects. They got locations that stand. They got, you know, bannermen that attach to give vigilance. Vigilant is their house-specific keyword. I could see it slotted into some very specific types of decks, but overall, it's not that exciting for me.
Yeah,
it would just be horrible to overcommit on a big power challenge and then to see a paper shield.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty terrible event myself. When I first read it, of course I don't read cards well, I didn't see the word participating, and so I thought it was going to be a situation where Lannister kneels out half your board, all you have to do is push through a power challenge by quite a bit, and all your guys stand, but that's not the case. It's just simply overcommitting to a challenge and having them all stand up, which, if you are playing Shireen and you're getting multiple power challenges, it could be viable in some sort of rush deck. But it just seems like you said, there's just better options out there right now.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, are there any other cards that you find interesting from this pack?
No, I think we've actually gone through all the ones that I find really interesting. There is something I'd like to talk about, though. I mean, regional season's upon us. The first regionals are going off this weekend. I think there's five regionals.
There is only one that matters. Kingdom Con, San Diego, Saturday. The land of the champions. John Bruno will be there, the current reigning world champion. So ergo, it is the only regional that matters.
Tell us about your deck, Tiny. What are you taking?
I am running a Targaryen Knights of the Hollow Hill deck. And the reason I'm running it is just simply I was so busy in the month since the FAQ dropped up until now that I just have not had time to find a new deck. I've tried a number of decks that are really strong. I love Martell Beric. I was very close to playing that deck. I loved the Targaryen Maester Marwyn deck. Very close to playing that deck. But both of those decks just lose if something goes wrong. And Bruno and I have a lot of conversations, and we talked about these decks, and we just kind of came to the same conclusion that do we really want a deck that is about hoping that the worst case scenario doesn't happen, or do we want a deck where we are in a situation where we can outplay our opponents no matter what is happening? And it just feels like a Beric deck is kind of an all or nothing deck. Like, you usually just punch him in the face.
Make a character.
What's that?
It's a mega character deck, and all these mega character decks, you have to protect your mega character.
Right, and if that mega character goes away, you basically lose, especially in a Beric deck, because all your power is probably gone as well. And it just makes it really frightening. Yes, it's strong. I mean, I don't think I ever lost with a deck. And in fact, I usually won in like two turns. I could have had these 10-minute rounds and gone to get sandwiches between every round and been well-rested. And then I would have gotten the top eight, and I would have gotten punked by somebody. And then I would have gone home crying about the fact that I shouldn't have played a Barrack deck.
A single nightmare, a Gaston Grey deck, anything like this can just totally ruin Barrack's day.
Right. And so while Barrack is really tempting, I feel like he's in a great place right now. There's still those bullets that are out there. You can tech for them, but you better pull that tech or you're going down.
Yeah. You wanna
ask anything?
Yeah, I do. What's your restricted card? Which way did you decide to go with the Targ deck?
I decided to play the Fury. I know that sounds crazy, but the Fury is so good. No, of course I'm not playing the Fury. I started by playing the Long Lances, and I really like the Long Lances a lot, but they feel like a win more card in Targ. Like, if you're already crushing them, then you just loop the Long Lances and the Waif, and you can end the game way faster than you normally would. But if they're controlling you and doing stuff to you, then the Long Lances isn't doing anything. And so I feel like the Hatchling's Feast gives you more survivability in those bad matchups. Like, if they get a Barrack and you can pull off his attachments, you can control him for a couple turns, killing the other guys on the board while you're trying to get your stuff together. It's just such a versatile card. It's not just a discard or kill card. It's just a control card. It really is an amazing card.
It can help you against all those rush decks too, right? Slow them down, burn out their characters with the power on the threat turn. I think it's a much better choice. So is there anything different from your deck other than the obvious swaps to make sure that it's now legal? What's your secret tech, Tiny?
I have quite a bit of secret tech in there. I'm basically worried about rush decks. So I have Nightmares in there, which isn't really that earth-shattering, right? But I haven't seen it really in a Targ Knights of Howl Hill deck. And I also have Fortified Position so that if I get in that situation with an Uber character, with a Viper, or with a Barrack, I'll have that one moment where I'll be able to do something against them. And yesterday I played against a Barrack deck and absolutely crushed him because Fortified Position plus Flame Kiss and a Forever Burning, boom, that's ball game. That's another change I made. I put Forever Burnings back in. I just feel like if I'm going to lose other elements, like I never had all the hand control anyway other than Aegon's Hill, but then if I'm losing all the standing, if I'm going to go burn, I might as well go burn.
And how does that, you've played this deck a lot. What's the matchup you're most scared of?
I'm scared of so many matchups. This is going to be that tournament where I'm going to do poorly, I think. Basically, the reason that I usually do well in tournaments is because I prepare quite a bit. I know all the matchups. I pick a deck that is going to do well in the meta. I know that I'm very good at predicting the meta once it's established. But like we talked about in the last episode, the meta is wide open. You can't predict the meta right now unless you are in a meta with just a few people. You play with them every week and you know where they're at. We're going to probably have 25, 30 people. It's going to be a spread out meta. So the bottom line is I'm scared of a ton of stuff, but most specifically, Barrack decks just scare the heck out of me. If I don't draw that answer in two turns or so, I just lose. I'm terrified of really any rush deck. And I've been beaten by just random, what look like awful decks. Because I'm just not that great at adjusting to decks I've never seen before. I just haven't been playing the game that long. It's been a year now. It feels like a long time, but I'm still not that great at you play some random crazy deck for me to look at it and immediately isolate, here is what I have to do. It often will take me a little while to figure that out.
Right, a few games and you don't have that in the top eight of the tournament.
Yeah, I'm not worried that I'll run into a crazy deck in the top eight, but I am worried that I'll go 4-2 in the event, maybe just miss the top eight. But the other thing is, in the top eight, I'm going to hit really good players. I mean, SoCal is just really top heavy. There's about eight very good players, And guess what? They all know how to handle Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill. Everyone's been playing this deck in our meta for months. It's just, there is nothing surprising. I'm going to flip over my agenda, and they're going to go, here's my plan. Now I'm about to execute it. Now you lost. So that's why it's a terrible deck, I feel like, to actually run in a tournament right now, because everyone is ready for it. Run something different that everyone and their mom isn't ready for.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, good luck anyways, Tiny. I hope you don't do us too much shame and get like a 3-2 or something, or a 3-3. Then I guess it would be my podcast after that, right?
Yeah, it very well may be. Okay. And you know what? I very well may go 3-3. This is that tournament where I feel like anything could happen. I feel like I could go 5-1 because, yeah, it's a really strong deck still. But I could easily go 3-3 if everyone goes, yeah, nice try. I teched for that. I've got 3 Price of Wars, all this other influence-crushing stuff. You know, you can't do anything. Ha, ha, ha. So, we shall see.
So, that wraps up another edition of Summer is Coming. And until next time, stay classy, Westeros.